Good evening. I'm Mike Malloy. I knew that wouldn't work. I knew it wouldn't. Poor Mike Malloy is in a bit of a sodden situation for those of us listening to us nationwide and expecting to hear, well, a much deeper tone of voice. That ain't going to work out tonight, at least for the first couple hours. A tropical storm has gotten between Mike and his beloved listeners tonight. I'm Angie Cuero. I broadcast live from the Left Coast every weeknight from 6 to 8 p.m. Pacific time in San Francisco. Mike and I have met on a couple of professional occasions, and what a very nice guy. And because he's stuck in that sodden situation, can't broadcast to you tonight. Now, there's a chance he may join you later this evening. The powers that be tell him the power may come on there in the next couple hours. And with any luck, he's going to resume doing his own show. In the meantime, I hope you enjoy meeting the new folk around the place. I'm Angie Cuero, broadcasting out of Green 960 in San Francisco. The name of the show is Live from the Left Coast. We have a gathering online every night as well. That is on our live blog. We have guests on there that go with the guests on the air. We have a regular gathering of an unusual little clatch of minds. That's all happening at lftlc.com/live. LFTLC. Those are the initials of the show. Very clever, yes? LFTLC.com/live. Here's the lineup for tonight. We're talking about the, you know, I hate to be a baby. I really want to call it the stupid amendment. Let me tell you a bit about myself for those of you who have never encountered me before. I'm steeped in real old-fashioned journalism. I've done news. I've done anchoring. I spent 15 years on San Francisco's premier public radio station and worked on a lot of other public radio stations. And that left me with a very strong support for respectful dialogue, not bothering to name call. But it also left me a little ticked off with an overabundance of caution when a little more firmer speaking out was required. So that's where I'm coming from. So when we talk about something like the Stupak Amendment, and if I slip and call it the Stupid Amendment, just forgive me, I'm being petty and childish, but my God, it's not stupid that someone proposed to set back women's private rights another decade. It's to be expected. I mean, look at the tenor of the world we are operating in. It's divided between the people who are stumbling along, trying to do their best, while under constant fire from the crazy right. And here we go again. We knew this kind of amendment would pop up. What is absolutely pathetic is that it made it through in the finished version of the House bill. Can you think of any other successful amendment to any other piece of legislation that has successfully gone through that limits the right of a specific group of people based on a moral, allegedly, moral objection to the exercise of a personal right? I morally object to our war. I morally objected to our bailouts. I have a lot of moral objections piled up over the last near decade. And I've done a lot of protesting, done a lot of phone calling, writing, talking, all the things that a proper citizen does. But at no point did I jingle up my representative and say, okay, I want you to take this percentage of money out of my taxes because I don't support where it's going. The system doesn't work that way. We can argue, technically, over whether it should, and we could even make that change someday, should we so desire, and should it pass through the system appropriately. But it don't work that way right now. Except where women's bodies are concerned. For some reason, we continue in this terrible stream of idiocy where it's still okay to negotiate over the freedoms of a woman and her body and the privacy between her and her doctor. Why? Why is that still fertile ground for laws? Her body, her very being, negotiable. If you want to cover people for health care, you have to sacrifice control over a body. And it's still okay. It's still okay. That's a topic in our 6 o'clock hour. I'm talking Pacific time. For those of you all around, that's this hour. Coming up in the next hour, this is pretty fascinating. There's a guy who travels about talking about euthanasia and suicide. And let me tell you, he carries controversy with him wherever he goes because he goes beyond the usual already controversial bounds of physician-assisted suicide for the terribly and terminally ill. He advocates on a much broader swath. The idea for Dr. Philip Nitschke, who's going to be in our studio tonight, is that suicide and euthanasia are much more personal rights, and that they should be given a lot more examination than they currently are in our society. And doesn't that make sense? I mean, when you think about it, if you take away from concepts of suicide as we carry them in Western culture, sacredness, God-given life, etc., 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 we're a number, if you think about it. All of those concepts are primarily rooted in religion. And in a country of religious freedom, why would the law have a say in whether you decide your life should be over? Because you're in terminal pain? Because you're a chronic depressive? Because it's Wednesday and you don't like Wednesdays? I mean, I don't mean to make flip of it, but frankly, what is the law's interest there in keeping a human being alive and having them surrender their right over that decision? Now, you can imagine this is a man who is not well received in all quarters. Philip Nitschke will be in the studio. He's the founder of Exit International, and he is making a swath through the United States on some speaking tours right now, and I'm glad to take advantage of talking to him. He is what he calls an end-of-life choices advocate. Exit International operates in Australia, the UK, New Zealand, and in North America, so you're going to learn a lot out of that hour. Coming up in the third hour, if Mike Malloy has not rejoined the power grid and won't be back with us, we're going to be talking a little more about what happened with Fort Hood for our local and internet audience. That has been a big topic for our last two nights. We're going to continue to talk about it because the pile of nearly obscene email that I got through my usual channels. I'm on the mailing list for all of the right-wing stations. I don't know how it happened, but I'm grateful because I see what they're up to all the time. And it's important to know that. And it's important for you to know that diversity killed all those people at Fort Hood. That cloying, left-wing, socialist marriage to diversity at all costs has now shed blood in Texas. Not the war, not post-traumatic stress disorder, not religious-based terrorism, which America practices as much as anybody else, but diversity. It's our fault, you see, because we let those people come into our country. And those people serve in the military. That is the talking point distributed all along the right today. And I'm going to share some of those emails with you coming up in our third hour. So if you're just joining us and you're thinking you ought to be hearing Mike Malloy, you're right. You ought to. But instead, you're hearing a Coiro-Malloy mashup. I'm Angie Coiro out of San Francisco on Live from the Left Coast. Mike Malloy is swamped in Tropical Storm Ida, which has cut out his power right now. So I'm going to be staying with you for at least the next couple hours. We hope that he is back on the power grid by 8 o'clock Pacific time, 11 o'clock Eastern time, soggy time. But if he's not, I'll be happy to stay with you for that whole time. And once again, I want to introduce you to our live blog. Our live blog is a parallel digital conversation we have every night. We have guests there. We have ongoing discussions there. It parallels but doesn't always exactly track with what we have going on the air. And you can head on over there if you like. That address again is lftlc.com/live. lftlc.com/live. If it sounds like an odd email address, it's the initials of this show, Live from the Left Coast. And if you like anything you hear here, or you'd like to suggest anything for the show, you can always email me, Angie@lftlc.com. All right, let's do a quick recap, and then we're going to swing on into the show very shortly. We are talking about, first, the Stupak Amendment. That's in all of this hour. I have a couple guests on the air, and we will take a look over on the live blog, pluck your comments and questions off of there to bring to our guests on air. We are also going to talk in our second hour about the ethics of suicide and euthanasia from a much broader perspective than you might normally hear it. And for that hour in particular, very much welcome your questions and your comments, but also your personal stories. Would like to hear that, too. And then third hour, it's all about Fort Hood, usual racism and intolerance. I'm Angie Coro, sitting in for Mike Malloy. Listen up to this gorgeous music, and then you're going to be hearing me for the next couple of hours here on Sirius, on XM, and on stations all around the country. Be right back. Show. It's a mashup tonight. I'm Angie Carter, sitting in for Mike and doing my own show at the same time. It's really nice to have you on board wherever you're listening from. We're talking about the Stupak Amendment. It is appalling. We should even have to talk about a reduction, not an additional restriction. I think that candy coats it. I think this is a reduction in availability of women's health care services in the name of cutting back on abortion. As we know, abortion is universally intolerable. Good Lord. Let's bring on a couple of guests here who will stay with us. Erin Mattson is with us for half an hour. She is Action Vice President with the National Organization for Women. Erin, thank you for sparing us some time tonight. I'm sure you've had a very busy day.
I certainly have. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, not at all. Jessica Ahrens joins us, too. She's the Director of Women's Health and Rights Program at the Center for American Progress. You've also seen her blogging, undoubtedly, at RH Reality Check. Jessica, welcome to you as well. Oh, Jessica sounds a little muffled there, so while we work on her line, let me start this off with Erin. Erin, when I characterize this as a reduction in accessibility for abortion, from everything I am reading online today and in the mainstream news, that does seem to be the case. So what happens if, God forbid, a health care package passes with that amendment intact?
Well, what we're seeing is essentially a ban on middle-class abortion. That is what they're attempting to do. They're attempting to ban funding for abortion for the middle class. I had the other day, actually on Monday, so yesterday, we marched out in front of the Senate, and I never thought in all of my years as an activist that I would have to write a sign, "My body, my money, my choice." What this will do is this will prevent women spending some or all of their own money from funding abortion through their health care plans.
That's the boggling part, is where you just said their own. How does that work?
Well, with these insurance exchanges, if the insurance exchanges receive any subsidized or people with tax credits in their pool, they're not allowed to offer abortion coverage, even to people who buy into that same plan who are paying for it with 100% of their own dollars.
It's more than alarming. It's on the disgusting side as well. Let me bring Jessica Ahrens back in here. I understand your line is fixed, Jessica. Would you like to sing a few notes and we can see if we can hear you?
Sure. Can you hear me all right now?
Very tuneful. Thank you.
Good.
Now, Barbara Boxer has already made a statement that this is not going to be in the finished health care bill, that she has got the votes to kill this. We've seen other pledges rise and fall, and a lot of things will change over time before we see a finished health care bill. Do you take any reassurance from her words?
I take some reassurance. I certainly hope she's correct, but we certainly had a lot of assurances from the House of Representatives, and unfortunately things didn't go as we had hoped. The pro-choice organizations really were making good faith efforts to find a reasonable compromise that acknowledged the current laws on funding for abortion, but also ensured that women going into the exchange wouldn't lose coverage that they currently have. And, we are very disappointed with how things went with the House, and we are certainly mobilizing all our resources to ensure that the Senate gets it right.
You're listening to Live from the Left Coast and the Mike Malloy Show, and we're talking about the Stupak Amendments. There are two different ways you can participate in our show. One of them is to join in our live blog. We just joined. Oh, Blah Agenda is a new person there. Thanks, Blah. Nice to hear from you. And the listener call-in numbers, let's do those both. Call-in numbers outside San Francisco, you'll want to call 415-882-9670. 415-882-9670. In the San Francisco Bay Area, 866-960-5733. 866-960-5733. 960-5753. And our live blog address, the initials of the show, live from the left coast, LFTLC.com/live. LFTLC.com/live. We'll integrate your comments, questions, and your links as we talk about this on the air. Now, Aaron Mattson, one of the things that alarms me is to hear that an alliance of Catholic bishops was key to the development of this amendment. What right does a religious group have to be on the Hill in Washington, D.C., while the sausage is being made? That strikes me as utterly out of line.
Well, it's absolutely baffling and puzzling. You know, this came down the pike late Friday night in a backroom deal, and this was something that was pushed by essentially celibate men in robes who've never missed a period.
That puts it more graphically than that. Yes, that's absolutely right. And they have no idea what that terror is like, nor, of course, will they ever bear a child to term. Jessica Ahrens, that was backed up, though, today by saying that, you know, we hear from, of all people, Sarah Palin, that we are selling women short when we think they can't go out there and earn their keep and make their splash in the world and bring a baby to full term.
Well, certainly, we are in favor of women who want to carry to term being able to do so and having every resource necessary to do so. But at the same time, there are always going to be circumstances where a woman feels like that is not the right option for her under the current circumstances. And, you know, she needs to be able to have that option as well. It's unbelievable that after all these years, we're still debating Roe versus Wade. We're still debating all the ways that women can or ought to be able to access abortion services.
We're going to come on back with more of this discussion on the Mike Malloy Show and live from the Left Coast. I'm Angie Quirro, waiting for your comments. Stick around. Angie Quirro in for Mike Malloy on the Mike Malloy Show, and you're also listening to Live from the Left Coast, emanating from San Francisco to the rest of the world. Our live blog is cooking along at lftlc.com/live, where Mona Lisa Wallace has just joined us on the blog. She's our guest expert for the next half hour. We're talking with her and with our guests on the air about the Stupak Amendment. Mona Lisa Wallace is with San Francisco National Organization for Women, and we have our guests on the line as well with Aaron Mattson from the National Office of the National Organization for Women and Jessica Ahrens, Director of the Women's Health and Rights Program at the Center for American Progress. Jessica Ahrens, I put out in the front of the show what I believe to be the fact. To my knowledge, there is no other law predicating that because a certain group of people does not believe in something philosophically, their tax dollars don't have to go to fund this. And were that the case for all of us, the Iraq War and could never have gone as far as it has. I mean, so much of that funding wouldn't exist if those of us who objected were able to pull our money from that. Is this as isolated and odd an exception to normal procedure as I think it is?
Yes, I think you're absolutely right. I do think that this is really special treatment. In all these other circumstances, when we have moral objections, we have channels for raising those objections and working through legitimate means to change policy. But this is the one instance where one particular group's viewpoint trumps everyone else's, and they are claiming and being listened to in terms of their right to withhold taxes from something that they find morally objectionable, but, you know, the majority of the country supports in one way or another.
Aaron Mattson, we've seen this in California with Proposition 8, where when something is strictly based on religious principles, the belief that gay marriage is wrong, the belief that abortion is wrong, somehow that never seems to make its way into the court system. We don't hear anyone just stand up in front of a judge and say, hey, if you strip down all of their objections to this, it's based on their God, their Bible, their beliefs, ergo has no place in either a court of law or in civic law. Why is it such a hard argument to make legally?
Well, I do think we will have legal struggles over Stupak Pitt should it become law. There's no doubt in my mind. So I do think that, you know, going forward, we can count on legal challenges. But, however, I think that we must fight as hard as we possibly can to ensure that it doesn't become law, and we don't need to get to that point.
What, and I understand you're not here as a lawyer, but I know that you've been exposed to a lot of these arguments. What arguments have been successful in the past in attacking this sort of amendment or this sort of logic in this argument?
Well, oftentimes what will happen, I've worked with conscience refusal clauses before, mm-hmm. and they'll try and build some reasonable accommodation around what a person's personal beliefs might prevent them from doing. At this point, we're not seeing any sort of reasonable accommodation around this. And frankly, this entire Stupak Pitt's amendment is not reasonable. Abortion is basic health care. Health care is a human right. Abortion is a woman's constitutional human right. There is no reason for this to become law.
And, of course, Jessica Ahrens, we have just come out of 8 years of a religiously inclined administration, and that's left its mark on the Supreme Court. Are you concerned if, I know there are a lot of what-ifs between here and there, but let's say this does pass with the Stupak Amendment and does go with the national organization and any other affiliated groups decide to go to court, what kind of Supreme Court are we looking at that would take this on?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is why progressives are reeling so hard from this. Because what we're looking at, what we're contemplating here with the Stupak Pitt's Amendment is the biggest restriction, federal restriction or reduction, as you said, in abortion access in over 30 years. Not since the Hyde Amendment was first passed in 1976 have we seen something that really presents such a threat to women's access to abortion overall. And I'm not trying to overstate it. This is really what we're looking at. And to come from a democratically controlled Congress and White House is just astounding. The anti-abortion rights movement is potentially accomplishing more under what is supposed to be a progressive administration than they were able to accomplish under President Bush and all the horrible attacks that we saw on reproductive rights under his rule. So it is really astounding in terms of the kind of court challenges we could see. Certainly under Casey, where you have to prove that law is an undue burden on a woman's access to abortion, I think we would normally be able to establish that. Unfortunately, we have a Supreme Court right now that is pretty biased against the right to abortion, and so it's a little disturbing to think about what they might do if given the opportunity to rule on a question like that.
Yeah, I want to draw some attention to some of the dialogue that's been going on around the internet here, and even on so-called leftist sites. We've seen a lot of arguing where I have to say it's primarily men weighing in with, you know, we just need to get the health care bill through. Don't worry. You know, we might have to take a little bad with the good. I haven't seen a whole lot of women posting to that effect. Aaron, just taking that as a working thesis, that attitude is out there. What does it tell us about overall the attitude toward availability of abortion as a health care element?
Well, I think it goes to show that, you know, that argument has been coming primarily from men. You know, I think everyone agrees among women, and I think among a number of men who are really thinking this through. You cannot ask someone to sacrifice their constitutional rights for the sake of the greater good. There is no such thing as the greater good with Stupak Pitt's.
Talking about the Stupak Amendment and whether it will survive in the finished health care bill, and if so, the best ways to deal with that. We have guests participating both on our live blog, lftlc.com/live, and we have them in via the phone lines as you are listening to Live from the Left Coast and the Mike Malloy Show. Our numbers outside the Bay Area, 415-882-9670. 415-882-9670, and toll-free in the San Francisco Bay Area, 866-960-5753. I'm sitting in for Mike Malloy as his household and his power grid recover from Ida. Let's go ahead and talk to Peter here, who's checking in from Los Angeles. Hi, Peter. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I was calling just about the strategy for the pro-choice group in ensuring that the legislation that came out was as strong as possible. And I think the there was just a comment earlier about how surprised she was about the fact that here we have such a strong Democratic majority and we have the biggest strike against choice in a generation. And I think the reason is that there's a reluctance to play hardball with legislators who have a D after their name.
I think there's got to be some merit to that, because we've seen that throughout the entire health care debate, not just on the abortion issue, but on one issue after another. The blue dogs have been as recalcitrant as the Republicans in my eyes. Let me take this first to Aaron and then to Jessica, get both their comments on that. Aaron?
Well, I think if we've been seeing that in the past, we're not going to see it anymore. Women are outraged. I have been getting hundreds and hundreds of phone calls and emails from women around the country suggesting that we should have a nationwide walkout, wanting to rally on their corner in their community, wanting to participate in a nationwide march. I think that's changing very quickly.
And your thoughts on that, Jessica?
Well, I think that, you know, President Obama tried to set a tone of civility, bringing civility back to our political debates, and we've seen that has been working with limited effect. And I think a lot of the groups really make a good faith effort to negotiate, to try to be reasonable. Everybody wants health reform. Everybody recognizes what an amazing opportunity this is, and no one wants to be blamed or scapegoated, as has been in the past, for it not working out. So I think that the groups were cautious and really, you know, and again, we're receiving assurances that, you know, that these deals and compromises weren't going to be made, and then they were. And so I think that, you know, it's been, you know, they tried to play nice. They didn't want to, you know, they kind of held their fire because they thought that the negotiation process was going to work the way it ought to. And then when this happened, you know, this kind of 11th hour change in the plan last weekend, at 1 in the morning on a Friday night, you wake up the next day and suddenly everything is different. You know, the message is clear. You do have to play hardball. That's the only thing that people on the Hill seem to be able to listen to. And it's unfortunate, because it would be great to have the climate around these political debates change. But right now, I think these habits, these ways of operating are still too ingrained, and the groups aren't going to make that mistake again.
I'm going to ask our listeners on the phone to hang on. We'll get to as many of you as we can. Aaron, I believe we have to say goodbye to you at this point. Is that right?
All right. Well, thank you so much for having me on.
I very much appreciate it. That is Erin Mattson. We have links to her work and her organization at lftlc.com/live. Initials of this show, Live from the Left Coast, lftlc.com/live. Mona Lisa Wallace from San Francisco now has posted some very interesting links. She's just put up the Planned Parenthood official statement on the Stupak Pitts Amendment. She's also listed a book that shows the history of abortion. A website, not a book. The history of abortion at patmcginnis.com. You don't have to memorize it. Go to lftlc.com/live and click it. When we come back, we're going to look at the connection between this argument and the Dominionists. C Street. The religionists, the people who really do want our law based not only on the Bible, but on the Old Testament. Do you know how ugly that would be? We're going to come back and complete this hour of the Mike Malloy Show and live from Left Coast with your phone calls, your comments, and our guest Jessica Ahrens on the phone and Mona Lisa Wallace online. I'm Angie Coro. Stick around for that. Mike Malloy Show, and live from the left coast, it's a mashup. I'm Angie Corro in for Mike Malloy tonight. And thanks to all of you who've been waiting on the lines as we talk about the Stupak Amendment. We have two guests still with us. Our blog guest, featured blog guest from San Francisco, is Mona Lisa Wallace Esquire. She is with San Francisco's National Organization for Women. And we still have Jessica Ahrens on the line here, where we are continuing to take your calls. And Jessica is the director of Women's Health and Rights Program at the Center for American Progress. I can't read the whole thing, but Jessica, I'm pointing people over to our live blog, LFTLC.com/live, where one of our listeners, Nora, has posted the many links that we're seeing between this legislation and C Street. Rachel Maddow has done just a great job of talking about the Christian fundamentalist influence on not just this, but on a lot of legislation. And now Nora's digging up a link for us that shows us that Stupak is, in fact, a Dominionist. The Dominionists believe that the law of America ought to be based on the Old Testament law, which, of course, is not turn the other cheek, but is more of an eye for an eye. Dominionists believe, for example, that gay men need to be stoned to death because lesbians aren't covered in the Bible. They just need to be shunned. They don't get stoned to die. It's that crazy. We're seeing an increasing link between legislation and the religious right. And what do we do to tackle this?
You know, it is a really disturbing trend. It's a big problem. There are a number of members of Congress who are part of this organization, also known as the Family, and they have several locations, several buildings here in the D.C. area, including one on C Street, and that is where Representative Stupak lives, and Representative Pitts, the co-sponsor of his amendment, also is a member of this organization. It's very fundamentalist, and it absolutely is influencing the direction of our country and the legislation. We just have to fight it with, more education and awareness. People need to realize what's happening. It's amazing how out of touch, these people are with where mainstream America is. Our culture is making progress in all sorts of ways. Women have just become half the paid employees in this country. And, all these fundamental changes are going on in our society. And they really want to take us backwards. They want to take us not just to the 50s. They want to take us, I think back to, as you were describing, kind of in the biblical era.
Yeah, and it's definitely, it's some frightening stuff. As Blah Agenda says on the live blog, Obama is even apparently frightened or somehow intimidated to say that gay people can marry. Do you see any leadership on the Democratic side about this, people willing to call it out and say, hey, this is not a law, this is a religious precept?
Certainly people have said that from time to time when, working, whether it's on reproductive or sexual rights, trying to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell, trying to, expand marriage equality. I think a lot of people do realize this is coming from a particular religious viewpoint, and it's not, in a pluralistic society, we need to ensure that all perspectives are heard and considered. There's certainly a place in the public square for those voices, but at the end of the day, we need to be very clear that our policies are secular and they're supposed to serve everybody in this society.
Let's get to our phone calls. We've had Ron hanging on in Brisbane, and Prez, do hang on. We'll get to you as soon as we can. Hi, Ron. Welcome to the show.
Hi there. I have to say, I am so angry and tired of conservatives who talk about not wanting their tax dollars to go to fund abortions or any other type of progressive issues. As a liberal, and last time I checked, liberals and progressives make up maybe half the population. We have no control over our tax dollars going to fund these wars around the world. We don't have control over our tax dollars. Why does the conservatives seem to own that issue of their tax dollars going to fund abortion? I don't understand.
Ron, I thank you for that call. And, yeah, we actually touched on that ground earlier on in the show. And I had asked Jessica, and she said no. To her knowledge, there's no precedent for any other law being predicated on X group doesn't want to fund Y procedure. It just doesn't work that way. You pay your taxes, and then you use your officials in Congress to try to influence the kind of legislation you have. But you don't get to pull your money back because you don't like what Uncle Sam is doing with it. Let's go to Prez in Santa Rosa. Hey, Prez.
Thanks a lot. I really appreciate the show tonight. I was going to say basically what Ron said. I was saying, let's just flip it around and use it. Say, okay, if their tax dollars can't be spent for that, then ours shouldn't be spent for the wars and everything. But the last comments by your guest there made me think of something else. I'm starting to wonder if these people, these so-called religious people, and it's religion. It's not spirituality. I would just call it the worst kind of religious thing. Don't have some kind of end times, or even, I would hesitate to say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. Some kind of they've given up. They take the low road and they're ready to die or something. They think we're all going to die right away or something. I think they're thinking about the end times and they want to be sure that they're pure or something. It is frightening. It's frightening for that reason, and I think that that's why they're so disconnected, because maybe they have no reason to live. I'm not sure what their motivation is. I really don't. I mean, it sounds crazy when I'm saying this, but you're right, Prez. Some of these people.
Yeah, you know? Because actually, and Prez, I can't laugh at that myself. Thank you for the call, because even today, I'm going to check. It was either the New York Times or Mother Jones came out with a story about how many people really believe that 2012 is the end times based on a prediction by, I don't know, Mayan whatever. But, yeah, there are actually people who are frightened about this and looking to officials for reassurance. Jessica, the answer to all of that has got to be education, education, education.
I would hope so, and hopefully at least we're starting to work on improving our educational system. I mean, it's hard. It's very hard to understand a perspective that's so fundamentally different, and it's hard not to demonize people. I do think that there are people who are sometimes acting out of good intentions, but I also think that there's a lot of fear, and then that turns into hatred, and it manifests itself in very ugly ways. And so I agree that, you know, education is what we need. I mean, we still have a large amount of the American population who believes the Bible is literally true, and certain parts of the Bible, selective parts of the Bible, are what is literally true. So I do think that. But at the same time, I want to offer some hope. I mean, as our demographics are shifting in this country, I think the perspectives are changing as well. And I do think that, you know, people, the younger generations are more progressive and less riddled with fear of the unknown, because...
You know what, Jessica, I have to let you go at this point. We're up against the clock, but I thank you so much. Jessica Ahrens with the Center for American Progress. Stick around for another hour. We're once again dealing with the ethical mire, this time of suicide and euthanasia, on Live from the Left Coast and the Mike Malloy Show. I'm Angie Coiro. I'm Angie Coiro on the Mike Malloy Show, coming to you from Green 960 in San Francisco. Thanks for coming around for the hour. We are going to be taking your comments and questions as we go along with our live blog on this new topic, and later this hour we'll open up the phones for your consideration if you'd like to log on immediately. Our website is named after our show, Live from the Left Coast, LFTLC.com/live, LFTLC.com. .com/live. Now, I know some of you have tuned in to hear Mike Malloy tonight. Mike Malloy was unfortunately on the bad end of Tropical Storm Ida. They're having a little disagreement together, he and she. And Ida took out the ISDN line that we'll be bringing Mike to you tonight. So I'm doing his show from San Francisco along with my own. Mike and I have worked together on a couple occasions. I have huge respect for him, and I'm very pleased to be talking to his audience tonight. Live from the Left Coast comes to you from San Francisco to all points everywhere else. We're moving into a whole different area this hour. But again, just like last hour when we were talking about the Stupak Amendment, there are issues of ethics involved. There are issues of religious prejudices and religious ideas. This time around, though, we're focusing not on abortion, but on end-of-life choices. That's a big topic all around the world. There is an organization that has been based outside the U.S., but is now starting to expand into it. Exit International already has a very strong presence in Australia and other countries, now moving on into Vancouver and into the Seattle area. And let me bring to you its leader and founder, Dr. Philip Nitschke. Welcome. I know that every time you bring up the idea, every time one brings up the idea of physician-assisted suicide, there are all kinds of questions that get raised. And once you expand those boundaries and you start talking about suicide on any level, when you start questioning the level of how much right an individual has over his or her life, it gets even more controversial. And although you have a well-established group, it doesn't mean that you've been able to, you know, plow that ground very peacefully and with no argument. You've had real trouble in Australia with some of your concepts.
My position on this issue has changed over the 10 or 12 years I've been involved. Originally, I started off as a doctor helping people under the world's first legislation under very strict conditions. If they satisfied the conditions to get help to die, and in fact, I provided the world's first legal, lethal, voluntary injection to a dying man. But as I started to engage with other people, as that law didn't last long, it was overturned by our federal government, I started to realise that every well adult, every sane adult of sound mind should have the option of a peaceful death, should they get to that point that that's what they want. And sometimes they'll have reasons which the rest of us will have difficulty understanding. But to simply restrict it to people who satisfy some tight criteria of terminal illness or severe suffering, I think really is to disenfranchise a large number of elderly people who know their own mind and get to that point by their own
I think we'd be, I'm not quite sure, but I think, Randy, are we going to move Dr. Nishki to another microphone, or is... Okay, you know what? We're going to have you move over one seat. We're playing musical chairs here in the studio because we obviously have oh, you're getting louder and clearer already.
How's that?
Oh, my.
Oh, well, we're in luck.
Beso profundo. Nice to have you on a mic that we can hear. When we talk about the conflict that arises and you strip it down to its essentials, a lot of people's concepts about how life should end and who should be allowed to end it come down to religious precepts. There are some laws that in some countries make allocation for the sacred, others officially don't, but the sacred creeps in there anyway. Mm. What philosophy do you come from in terms of how much power one has over anyone's life?
Look, well, my philosophy, I mean, my own personal view is, I mean, I'm an atheist. I don't have any particular beliefs in a spiritual being. I understand that a lot of people do, and I recognize and respect their views. But my own position is that if I decide that I have got to the point where death is what I want, I would like to know that I would be able to have that option. So I want to know how I can go about it. I want to know that it'll be peaceful and effective. And I can see why many other elderly people come along and they say just that same thing to me. They say, look, I don't think I'll ever want to use that option, but I want to know that it's out there for me. And because people keep saying that, we've found that it's very worthwhile giving people the information they will need, and by and large it is just information. If people have access to the best information, then it's not a matter of changing the laws to allow terminally ill people to get help to die with the assistance of a doctor. It's a matter of making sure that every elderly person of sound mind knows exactly what they need to do. They know about the right drugs, they need to know about how to get them and how to administer them, so that if they get to that point, they've got that choice. By and large, you see elderly people stop worrying at that point. They know it's out there. They've got the choice. They get on with living. And it's a paradox, perhaps, but when you get access to the best lethal drugs and lock them away safely in the cupboard, people stop worrying. They have happier and probably longer lives without this anxiety hanging over them.
It's an insurance policy of sorts.
Yeah, they see it as that. They know they'll probably never use it, and they certainly hope they don't have to, but they'd like to know it's there.
What about those who are not terminally ill, who don't have physical ailments, who have, you know, who deal with depression or who just feel like their life is over?
Yes, well, I've had a bit to do with some people that surprised me. They came to me and they said, I want to die for reasons which I myself would not feel that they were certainly reasons that I would find as being compelling. One very notable case, a woman said to me, I'm going to die in 4 years' time because that's when I'll be 80. And 80 is the time to die. And I said, are you ill? And she said, no, but 80 is the time to die. And I thought she wasn't serious. I saw her regularly as I travelled to the city she was from. She was a retired academic, very articulate and intellectual. And as she got closer to that time, I started to say, look, Lisette, for goodness sake, you're not sick. Write a book. Go on a world cruise. And she said, why don't you mind your own business? She said, all I really want from you is access to information, because I make those decisions. Don't patronise me. You don't agree with me, but it's not your business. It's my business. She was a sound-minded, rational adult. Not my views. I'll be out there, no doubt, at 80, screaming that every last health dollar be spent on me to keep me alive for another 5 minutes. But, but she said that that was right for her. And I don't think the idea of us judging other people, setting ourselves up to be some sort of arbiter, and I'll look at your case, oh, yes, that's all right. Look at that case. No, that's not good enough. The simple criteria, if you're an adult and if you're of sound mind, you need access to the information. And we do our best as an organisation to get that out there. And we had a very big workshop today in San Francisco. Average age 75, which is the usual group. Usual questions, the same sort of questions that we got asked in Glasgow, the ones we got asked in Sydney. same sorts of issues come up all the time. How do I get the drugs? How do I store them? How do I know they'll work? And I'll feel a whole lot better if I know that's in place.
Dr. Philip Michko with Exit International here on the Mike Malloy Show and live from the Left Coast. Let's talk about the legal questions here. Mm-hmm. In the U.S., there's a patchwork of laws, vary from state to state, and they're always in flux. You know, this one's being challenged, that one's being overturned. What's the situation in Australia?
Look, it's pretty much, I mean, it's very much like that in most Western nations. I mean, there's a uniformity about some aspects, apart from the states that have actually introduced physician-assisted suicide, like Oregon and Washington State. You've got a situation where, by and large, suicide is not a crime. It used to be, attempting was. It's not a crime, but anyone who would advise, counsel, or assist, that's usually designated a serious crime. In fact, you can be looking at long periods of incarceration if you should advise, counsel, or assist someone to take that course, which is a lawful step. And there's no other example in law of that where to advise, counsel, or assist someone to do something which is lawful attracts any penalty, leave alone savage penalties. And that's true in Australia. It varies from state to state. Two states of Australia still have a possibility of life imprisonment for advising, counselling, assisting someone to take the lawful step of suicide. So, obviously, giving someone drugs and saying, take these and you'll die, is assisting them. But if you tell someone that that's a drug that if you take it, you will die, and that's by and large what we do, give out the information they need, then it becomes much greyer in law. Is that assisting, or is that simply informing a person so that they're in the position to make valid and valid choices in their best interests? And we argue that giving out the best information allows people to make choice. Sometimes they'll move away from the suicide option. Sometimes they'll move towards it. But you need to give people information. The laws and the way they're currently structured, of course, saying one hand suicide's not a crime, but making it almost impossible to get good information because there's a fear that people who provide it may be in some ways penalised, often puts people in a situation where they can't get the information they need. They become more desperate. Sometimes they become so desperate and sometimes so sick that they then have to ask someone else to help them. And as soon as you move into that path, you start exposing those people who love you enough to help you to severe legal risks.
How severe have been your own entanglements with the law?
Well, the idea is to try and be smart. And I mean, I know that we are working along the edge of the law there, but I don't want to be a fool. I mean, I certainly don't want to find myself incarcerated. I've got great respect for some people that have gone down that path, and I've respect for people like Jack Kevorkian. But, of course, one thing that really silences you is prison. And if you want to be silenced, go to prison. And I have not the slightest interest in that path, so the idea is to be clever. Now, I'm not suggesting that I'm so smart that I'll never get into trouble, but I do try to play it carefully, because there are a lot of people out there who would quite like to see things in my life take a turn for the worse, and I'm no intention of making it easy for them, so I watch out, and so far we've been very lucky.
All right, we're going to continue this conversation in just a moment on both these shows, The Mike Malloy Show and Live from the Left Coast. I'm Angie Quirra. We're looking for your participation at LFTLC.com/live, initials of the show, LFTLC.com/live. And you can call us at 866-960-5753 or 415-882-9670. I'm Angie Quirra. Both shows, the Mike Malloy Show on Sirius, on XM, and on stations around the country and the world. I'm Angie Quirra with my own show from San Francisco, LFTLC, live from the Left Coast. We're coming to you live from Green 960 in San Francisco. We're waiting to hear if Mike will be rejoining us. If they get the power back up at his home, we're going to find out. Looks like a tree took out his ISDN line. So welcome to everyone who normally would tune in to hear Mike Malloy. You can join the gang on the live blog at LFTLC.com/live. LFTLC.com/live. We're talking to Dr. Philip Michko. He is here from Australia with his group Exit International. They're conducting workshops around North America. We're talking on the topics of suicide, assisted suicide, euthanasia under its various terms. It's all very controversial. And in fact, it got a little more interesting for you, Dr. Michko, when there was an advocate for assisted suicide or for the freedom for suicide who had said that she was going to commit suicide because she had cancer. She had terminal cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And she committed suicide very publicly. And as it turned out, she didn't have cancer, and that opened a whole different can of worms there. She was affiliated with your group or just someone of
yes.
the same mind?
Oh, you're talking about the issue of Nancy Crick. Yeah, Nancy,
right.
Nancy Crick was a very courageous person. She had had most of her bowel removed because of cancer. Now, technically, I suppose, and many people who didn't like her choice then said, well, she didn't have cancer because she'd had a bowel removed, and so in a sense she didn't have cancer. She had, if you like, the consequences of cancer surgery, which were ongoing pain associated with the adhesions. She was told and found out from our laws in Australia, and similar to the US, that ending your own life's not a crime, but if anyone should be with you, therefore possibly assisting you, they may be in trouble, and she was upset about that. She crowded a house with 20 friends and said, now I'm going to drink my Nembutal, the barbiturate, which is the best of the euthanasia drugs. And so she took the drug and died, and the rest of the 20 people said to the government, are we going to be punished for being with her? We didn't help her, but we were physically present by her side. And the government, after 2 years of investigating, we had police raids across the nation, eventually decided that they weren't going to take it any further. But they immediately launched, the government, to try and defend its position of having no decent legislation, said this person didn't have cancer, so what a shame, or how outrageous that we were involved. The reality is, though, she had a pretty miserable life brought about by the severe surgery associated with her cancer, so it becomes rather a semantic point about whether she had cancer or just the consequences of cancer. But that's how she's remembered now, as a woman who didn't have cancer.
When you talk about making the decision over your life, and again, we've already established that it's already controversial for someone to be have an assisted suicide if they are established to be ill, if there's no argument on
yes.
the table. That put me in mind of a movie I'm almost sure you've probably seen called The Bridge, a documentary on suicides off the Golden Gate Bridge. I don't know if you're
yes,
familiar.
Yes, yes.
Brilliantly made. It was very beautiful to see, and it raised a lot of questions, primarily with the main character, Gene, who was from the North Bay here. Gene was young, and he was by no means sick. He didn't like his life. And his life consisted of having had a mentally ill mother, battled mental illness his entire life, having been tired and suicidal most of his life. And those who believe that suicide should not be an option, or at least should be a very last drastic option, would advocate upon him that he look into therapy, that he have certain drugs, whatever. And to me, the central question is, does an individual human being have the right to say, my life is not worth waking up tomorrow? And how far does society's interest extend into that person's private circle?
Yes, look, I think that's the case. I mean, my appreciation and my assessment of that issue is that we must give people this right. I mean, to say that life is precious, life is a gift, is fine, but what sort of gift is it if you can't give it away? They say you've got this gift of life, but you cannot give it away. That's a strange gift. And I think you have to simply say that, look, some people will make decisions we don't like, but if we're serious about empowering individuals, of course there are criteria. We're not talking about children who don't understand the permanence of death. We're not talking about mentally disabled people who can't make rational decisions. But if you're a person of sound mind and an adult, we usually extend the age to 50. So people can come to our workshops provided they're adults over the age of 50. People say, well, what's wrong with younger? And we say, well, you have to have life experience. But if you then decide to end your life, I don't think it's up to other people to come along and judge you. We mightn't agree with it, but we shouldn't be putting obstacles. We shouldn't be chaining people to the planet. We shouldn't be locking them up, putting them in psychiatric institutions because they choose to take this course that we ourselves find trouble in understanding.
It sounds almost arbitrary to have to pick a number and say, you can come after this age, but not before that age.
But look, you're going to have to pick an age, and that's the same with anything. I mean, we have to say that at a certain age, you can drink. At a certain age, you can drive a car. Now, we know that some people can't drive a car and they're 40, 50 years old, but nevertheless, an age is picked, and it's adulthood as opposed to childhood, childrenhood, if you like. But as far as ending your life is concerned, we originally said that adults, every adult of sound mind, and I got into more and more difficulty when I was being questioned. People said, well, you're talking about 18-year-olds. They're adults. Well, I guess they are. They're the ones that can go off to Iraq and kill people. They're 18. They're teenagers. So next thing, I find myself being described as this person who wants teenagers to be given the right to end their life. So we ended up drawing back from that position and thought, look, all right, you've got to have life experience. We'll settle for 50. But it doesn't matter what age you pick, people will complain. 50's not bad. Today the workshop was packed. They were all 70 or thereabouts. No one was arguing about the borderline.
We're going to talk about this workshop, Sam. We're going to talk about your book and the freedom to read your book when we come back here on the Mike Malloy Show and live from the Left Coast. Let me give out those phone numbers for you. And we do have many comments on the blog. I will get to those. Those are at lftlc.com/live. lftlc.com/live. Call-in numbers, 866-960-5753. And outside San Francisco, 415-882-9670. 882-9670. I'm Angie Carr. We'll be right back. On the Mike Malloy Show. I'm Angie Carr, hosting both for this evening. Welcome to the Mike Malloy listeners from all around the world. And welcome to our live blog as well, seeing some new faces there tonight. Mike Malloy is off because of electricity problems and an ISDN connection that got messed up by a storm. He's going to try to get back by the next hour. If not, we're working on a good hour for you on Fort Hood. It's really dismaying to see the unity of the right wing on the issue of the shooting at Fort Hood, because, of course, it wasn't guns, it wasn't PTSD, it wasn't religious terrorism, it was diversity. Diversity is a dangerous thing on a military base, and it shouldn't be there at all. And the rest of us who think otherwise are a bunch of crazy leftists. It's coming up in the next hour of the Mike Malloy Show. Right now I'm talking in studio to Dr. Philip Nitschke. He is the author of the Peaceful Pill E-Handbook. He's got a PhD in laser physics. He's a graduate of Sydney University Medical School and the head of the group that we're discussing about tonight, Exit International. He was the first physician to administer a lethal, legal, voluntary injection under the world's first suicide law, assisted suicide law, the Rights of the Terminally Ill Act, Australia. And we're talking about all the ethics issues that accrue around that. The website, exitinternational.net, is linked on our own website, lftlc.com/live. And let me again encourage you to participate in our show one of two ways. You can join us on the phone line within the San Francisco Bay Area. You can call 866-960-5753, 866-960-5753. Listener call-in number from outside the Bay Area, 415-882-9670, 415-882-9670. And I got a lot of comments collected from the live blog we're just about to go through. If you are listening right now in Southern California, there is an appearance coming up very quickly for you. It is coming up this Saturday with Dr. Nitschke, and we have that information online too. Go to lftlc.com/live for that information. Jack Space says on the blog, Doctor, that life is a dress rehearsal for the final act. I frankly don't want to bureaucratize that most important of moments. Would you really want your last moment on this thin coil to be in some punk rock emergency room with people yelling and screaming and machines and bright lights and confusion? Or would you rather go out peacefully, maybe with loved ones nearby, obviously a vote in your direction?
Yes.
But, you know, Norm brought up something on the blog that I found interesting. It hadn't come into our conversation yet, and that is the issue of how the business side of death plays itself out. Norm says, a friend of mine, confined to a hospital and a wheelchair, considered his prospects, wheeled himself to and off a high level of the hospital parking structure. Friends and family hushed it up because his wife desperately needed the life insurance proceeds.
Yeah, I was a little confused by that, because most life insurance policies are not negated by suicide. I mean, there are some, and I guess it depends on the policy. Most have a exclusion period, so you take out the policy, and usually it's a period of time of a year or 13 months before they would accept suicide as a means by which they would pay out. So I guess that would depend. But, I mean, people do, of course, have various reasons not wanting others to know that they've decided to take their lives. There is a stigma associated with suicide. We get people who say, look, I'm battling this lung cancer, but when it gets too bad, I am going to take that final step, but I do not want suicide on my death certificate. Now, they then go to great lengths to use a method which is not going to be detected, perhaps even at autopsy, and that's possible. But again, you've really got to know what you're doing. And that's brought about because they don't want to be known as Aunt so-and-so or Uncle so-and-so who suicided because of the stigma. Others don't care. In fact, you can divide rooms up, and I divided the room up today. In today's gathering, half the people said, I don't give a damn what you write on my death certificate. That is the last of my worries, but some of us find it as a serious issue, and if that is the case, you have to be careful.
And, you know, you have to circumvent sometimes the church beliefs. I know, for example, that I'm a big worker in Right to Life, and I know any number of people who are on paper anti-abortionist, and they sign petitions and they give money to Right to Life causes, but when they need an abortion, they kind of sneak in the back door of the clinic. And I think there's an equivalency here, because I'm sure there are people who religiously believe euthanasia is wrong until they come up against the need to it and reconsider. Have you talked to those people?
Yes, you do see that. And I mean, I think that just reflects the fact that I don't think any of us really know what we're going to want to do when those final events come close at hand. You can do these little hypotheticals and say, oh, I would want this and I would want that. And when the time comes, you may do the exact opposite. I think the main thing, though, is to be very tolerant of other people's views. And I mean, if people don't want to go down this path, we would, of course respect that. But I don't want other people telling me that I must not go down this path. I want this option. And I can see why most people want to know what's out there, even though very few of us will take it.
If I were Catholic and I wanted to follow the advice in your book or to get your assistance, reaching my conclusion, I couldn't be buried in consecrated ground. Is that the kind of thing you're willing to cover up?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't. I would see that that was a problem that you really had to work out within your own so that you were comfortable with that particular view. I wouldn't put obstacles in your way, but I wouldn't be suggesting that it was a good idea either. I mean, these are things that worry some people. They're obviously not worries that I myself have, but I recognise that other people are concerned, and you would need to come to some satisfactory solution for yourself about how you were going to deal with it.
We have a caller from off the air who said that many younger people with serious illnesses should have this right as well. We were discussing earlier that at workshops you conduct, there's an age. Let me discuss that pretty thoroughly. Mm. But in terms of distributing the book, in terms of having the information available, it is going to get into younger hands. Does that give you pause?
It is. It is. And I mean, we sell the book online. And of course, the hard copy books are available through Amazon. Like, the book, incidentally, is totally banned in Australia and New Zealand. It's deemed to be so evil in Australia that its mere possession is a crime. It's got the strictest level of censorship, but that's not an issue over here in the US. Now, I don't think Australians are all that different to people over here, but obviously the Australian government made a decision that this book was dangerous and it should not be out there in a way that it could be accessed by what they would describe as vulnerable people. The trouble with that argument is, if you say that because some vulnerable people might get the information, therefore no one should get the information, that disenfranchises huge numbers of well elderly people that are desperate for the information. So a balance has to be struck. We do what we can with our workshops. We have to be over a certain age. As far as the book's concerned, you've got to say you're over a certain age. In one of the restrictions that was placed in New Zealand, it was sold in a sealed wrapper. There's never an easy answer to this issue about how do you keep information away from some groups. But I think that, by and large, you should go down the path of censorship with extreme caution. And increasingly, Australia has become very enthusiastic about censorship. Censoring the internet. They're about to take our website off the internet in Australia, censoring the book and censoring our ability to hold meetings, something like we saw in the Vancouver Library, where they actually control your ability to hold a meeting by removing access to venues and the like. And the idea seems to be, underpinning this, that the way you keep elderly people happy and living a long and happy life is to keep them totally deprived of information. Keep people in the dark and they'll live longer and happier. Now, I think that's bizarre, but it's an increasing sentiment expressed by our lawmakers.
I'd like you to tell that story about what happened in Vancouver with your gathering.
Yes, well, it's happened a few times recently, but Vancouver was a surprise. The booking was at the Vancouver Public Library, and we often use public libraries to run these events. They've got copies of my book in the library, but when we said that we wanted to hold the event there, they initially took the booking and then at the last minute suddenly said, I'm sorry, it's too dangerous from a legal point of view. If you come along and talk about this information and someone uses it, we will be implicated as an organisation that we will have effectively assisted a suicide, and that would be a crime, and our lawyers have told us that we must cancel this venue. We said, well, look, my book's in the library here. True, it's banned in Australia, but it's not banned in Canada. And they said, oh, yes, that's all very well, but, I mean, we've got copies of Mein Kampf in the library. We don't invite Adolf Hitler to come along and speak here, which I thought was a quaint comment, but that was from the chief librarian. It was taken up by the Canadian Council of Civil Liberties, and their lawyers said quite the opposite. They said giving out of information is not in itself, you can't argue that in itself, the provision of information, is assisting a suicide. What it does, as I said earlier, is empowering. It allows people to make valid choices. To say on one hand you've got the choice, but to deprive people of all information is quite cruel. People say they want to take that course, but they can't find out. And the commonest method the elderly use to end their life, not in America, but in Australia, America is different because of your access to guns, but in Australia, the commonest method used by the over 70s to end their life is not access to good drugs, it's by hanging. And that's bizarre. It's a grim and horrible death, but you don't need to know anything. Rope's available. They can't ban rope, although I'm sure they'd like to. And people don't need to know anything. So, and it works.
So regardless of their intent, what they're doing is they're dooming someone to a much more painful, uncomfortable death rather than giving them the information
yes.
how to do it right.
That's right. And people get anxious and they get worried because they can't work out what to do, and desperate people do desperate things. Now, if you give people information, they stop worrying. If they've got that precious bottle of Nembutal locked away, they've been down to Mexico, they've got the drugs, it's locked in the cupboard, they stop worrying. And once you stop worrying, they can get on with enjoying what's left of sometimes pretty difficult lives. Cancer's worsening, wake up every day, it's dreadful. They know that if they want to leave, they just got to go to the cupboard. And that gives them the strength to keep going. And we have so many accounts, admittedly anecdotal, of people who have lived longer simply because they know they've got the choice there, and it gives the person the courage. They're back in control.
Email from Jeff. He says, what is the ethical thing to do when you have a 19-year-old patient in pain, half his body already gone to cancer, he has only a few more days to live, make him suffer the pain until he dies naturally, or let him take matters into his own hand? Yes, singular, as in half his torso is already gone. Jeff and I have actually discussed this particular case. This is very real, what he's talking about. I can hear his anger at those people who would make this 19-year-old old boy go on. Jack's base in Berkeley brings up something I had not considered. He said it's not directly related, but certain to the dying process, a friend who died of leukemia a few years back did a few MDMA ecstasy sessions with his wife in order to help them move through the different stages a bit more mindfully and directly. When we come back, I want to talk to you about the door that opens, which is how non-traditional approaches to death in almost any sense kind of prick people's ears up and say, I don't know, do we want you taking the acid to learn how to die? We're going to get back to that when we come back in just a moment with Dr. Philip Nitschke here in the studio, and we're taking your comments at LFTLC.com/live. The two shows you're listening to live from the Left Coast and the Mike Malloy Show here from Green 960 in San Francisco. We'll be right back. Gosh, I did make a mistake. It's not just diversity that killed the people at Fort Hood. It was also Barack Obama. Rush Limbaugh apparently has come out and said Obama is to blame for the Fort Hood shootings. That's our topic in the next hour of the Mike Malloy Show. I'm Angie Coiro sitting in for him tonight. The show here in San Francisco is live from the Left Coast, and we're happy to have all of you here online, on satellites, on terrestrial radio. By golly, there are a bunch of you. Look at all you folks. Thank you for tuning in. We've got Dr. Philip Nitschke in the studio for one more segment as we discuss the right to die, the right to suicide, the right to physician-assisted euthanasia. Many, many good comments and stories coming in on the live blog. Too many for you to fill you in on the air. I encourage you all listening to join us at lftlc.com/live. LFTLC.com/live, where Nora says, the more of my rights that are codified in law, the better. To allow one of my rights, the right to die by my own choice, to stay or fall into the hands of others or institutions, is going in the wrong direction. What other rights could be eroded in that direction, like forcing me to live in pain or misery, have certain operations, or take certain drugs? No, I don't like that at all. Nora, thank you for that comment. I opened up the door, Dr. Nitschke, before we went to the break, about one of our guests who talked about his friend experimenting with hallucinogenic drugs before dying. And that opens to me the whole issue of non-traditional approaches to death, which would include euthanasia, which would include, I mean, it's pretty non-traditional to go ahead and experiment with drugs before you die. But it strikes me that if for some reason our procedures, our rituals around death, they're just so seared into what we are as a culture. At least here in America, it's pretty darn formalized. Trying to convince people that you don't need to spend a great deal of money on a coffin, or that you should have a green burial, you know, where everything just goes back to the earth. It's very hard for some people to swallow that.
It is, and I mean, it's becoming, it is certainly locked in the way people in a certain culture see the way that death should be experienced, and a sort of an intolerance to people who would try to do things in a different way. And we are such a death-denying culture, American culture, Australian culture. The age at which you see your first dead body goes up every year in this. We're so quick at getting the sick and the dying away from the rest of us. Children never see them. You might see 1,000 a night on television, but the real seeing someone who's actually died gets harder and harder because we're so wanting to push them away and to deny that death is out there, that we do this so effectively. And when I have briefly worked in other cultures, our own Aboriginal cultures in Australia, there disease and death was intermingled with life, so that the children saw people who were dying, the dying were involved in the community, and they didn't come out of that early upbringing with this fear of death that we see surrounding us in our, if you like, advanced Western culture, where we go to such lengths to keep it away. And that's why I think that a lot of younger people have trouble wondering why their 80-year-old parents are coming along to workshops to learn about how to peacefully end their own lives. And many of the 80-year-olds say to us, I tried to talk about it with my son or my daughter, my adult son or daughter, and they couldn't understand it, so in the end I just don't talk to them anymore about this. And they come along, but they just recognise that people of a younger generation don't want to know about it, and they certainly don't want to think about their parents looking seriously at ending their own lives.
One thing we have benefited from, there's such an influx of Hispanic culture now that here in the U.S. we're seeing Day of the Dead.
Yes.
And there's a certain embrace of just the kitsch involved. You find everything with a skull all over it. But over and above that, people are learning that death is a part of life and that you can sit and consider your past loved ones after the fact and without making it a big sad deal. It's part of life.
No, I, from what little I know about that celebration, it does seem to make an awful lot of sense. And it's good to see that you're having influences like that that are taking effect, and people are starting to see there are other ways to view this inevitable event.
Talk about what happens at a workshop.
Well, it's as I said, they're well elderly people, generally average age 75. They come along, they ask the same questions here or in other cities where we run them. That is, I want to have choice. I don't think I'm ever going to use it, but I want to know it's out there. I give a couple of anecdotes about people I know that have let the situation deteriorate till they've become so sick that they can't do much at all. And then they've got to ask someone to run around to get on a plane and go overseas and get the drugs for them. And then I've seen some people get into very difficult trouble there, because, of course, that's assisting. So we advise people that if you're well enough to come to a gathering like this, such as the one we had today in San Francisco, you're well enough to go down to Mexico, get your own drugs, but know what you're doing. Make sure you get the right thing. Go overseas, look at the other options that are available here, but work out what you're going to do, get it all understood, lock it safely away so that if things deteriorate, then if you really get to the point where death is the course that you want to take, you can simply take that step yourself without having to involve those people you love. I usually start off by saying to everyone, I want you to fill out on this big sheet of white paper all the people you know prepared to spend 20 years in jail for you. And that's a salutary exercise for all of us, because everyone's sitting there looking rather bleakly at a blank sheet of paper, because not many of us know too many people prepared to spend 20 years in jail. And then I say, well, that's what you're likely to ask someone to do for you if you don't plan ahead. Plan ahead, get your own drugs so that if you take them, you can just do it. But don't ask your wife or husband to get on a plane to Tijuana and then come back and then risk them finding themselves in that trouble. We've got several people, in fact, I know of that are in jail now for doing that. Out of compassion and love, they helped someone die, and they're paying one hell of a price for it. Whereas if you plan ahead, and if you do get to that point and take that course, you don't expose people to those risks.
I want to thank you for spending time in here with us. I actually have so many more questions, so I hope to have the chance to talk to you again. And I wish you luck with your North American enterprise. Are you optimistic?
Oh, very, very much so. We're having to relocate here, and it is good to find a place where at least you can talk about these issues without having the constant trouble of censorship and the banning of ideas and the banning of thoughts and words, which is increasingly the Australian way, unfortunately. But what I'd like to do is to make sure that you have a copy of our banned book. See, this is for you.
Wow, my own banned book.
Your own
very,
banned
very
book.
Pleased. Thank you very so much for that. And, of course, this is from Exit International. It's the Peaceful Pill Handbook. It is new and renewed for June of 2009, brand new edition. And it's a co-project of Dr. Philip Nitschke, our guest this hour, and Dr. Fiona Stewart. And it says right on the front, banned in Australia. At the same time, it says Amazon top 100 bestseller. There's irony for you.
Thank you.
So thank you for that. For those of you who are listening for an update on Mike Malloy, The lights are still out at Mike's house. I'm sorry to say the ISDN line is still down. But it is a pleasure for me to talk to you tonight. Now, keep talking to you in the next hour. We have news that Norman Solomon, who is so well aware of what's been happening overseas, he's talked to a lot of the troops, and he has a particular interest in what happened to Fort Hood and the pressures that are brought to bear on the military. He's going to join us as we talk about the attack of the right on the Fort Hood issue. It is absolutely appalling to me that they're taking an issue like this to capitalize once again on beating the same political drum. Can't we even come together over U.S. citizens being gunned down in their own home state? Apparently not. We'll talk about that in the next hour of the Mike Malloy Show. Keep listening here in San Francisco. It's an extended hour of LFTLC, live from the Left Coast. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Angie Curro. See you online until the other side of the break. From the Left Coast, I'm Angie Curro, sitting in on the Mike Malloy Show, coming to you from Green 960 in San Francisco. Had a phone call from Mike. His phone's working. In fact, his electricity is apparently working. He was able to listen to a little bit of his own show. But he can't do it because Miss Storm Ida came through and knocked a tree over in their ISDN line. So he's going to get everything fixed up for tomorrow night. I'm very pleased to be taking care of his listeners in the meantime. Here in San Francisco, let's consider this an extension of our nightly show, Live from the Left Coast. And the reason I bring that up is because I want all of you to be able to participate on our blog, if you like. That's an ongoing digital conversation parallel to what we're talking about here on the air. You can participate with comments, questions, the occasional snide remark, and links, if you'd like. That's all happening right now with the whole gang still in place at LFTLC.com/live. Why did they make a website out of alphabet soup? We didn't. The initials of the San Francisco show, Live from the Left Coast, LFTLC.com/live. All right, let's do talk about what's happened with Fort Hood. And I don't mean what's happened in terms of the shooting itself and the prosecution that will ensue. I'm talking about the immediate, the instant, and the truly sad and despicable politicization of something that is awful all by itself. Why must the right take something that is an affront to human consciousness, is an affront to human decency, a tragedy by any measure, and try to make it into a political blunderbuss to whack people over the head with immediately? Did you notice, before we had any idea who or what was responsible for what happened there, Barack Obama was already being criticized? He didn't speak quickly enough. When he did speak, he said something extraneous up front. He gave a shout-out to a friend of his. Now, okay, I know people on the left are accused of seeing racism everywhere. Had that been George W. Bush, had they brought that up at all, they would have said he greeted a friend, which is nice and formal and very white. But because Barack Obama is a hip black dude, they had to say he gave a shout-out to his friend. Any chance at all to sharpen that particular knife? Now, over the course of this morning, as I was preparing the San Francisco show, I was subject to one email after another from the right. And let me repeat, I am really glad I am on the right-wing mailing lists. It keeps me up with what they're up to. And what they're up to is inevitably distasteful, frequently just plain wrong, but always dismayingly organized. And their talking point today was about how, once again, the left, socialist, liberal Obamites had failed America by allowing diversity in the troops. Because, you see, those people did not die at the hands of a gunman at the other end of a bullet because of the stress on a military base after a long, endless war. They all died because the left has forced the military to compromise its own intelligence to let those Muslims in there. And you know, the Muslims just are too dangerous to allow there. let's not give any thought to how many of our translators have lent their skills so that we have some form of intelligence to run this war on. Let's not think about the Muslims who have died in action for us. Let's not think about the ones who are serving even now to the best of their ability and to the sacrifice of their own families and their own personal lives. Let's not think about them at all, because you know what? They're only there because we on the left tolerate them being there. We are so mistaken. And you know those Muslims, they can blow up. My God, you feed them the wrong size carrot at lunch, they're going to go blow something up. Because that's the way they are. Okay, I'm having a little dark humor with this, but my God, it's just sad. It's just sad. And it turns out that Rush Limbaugh apparently cut to the chase on this. And he just decided to... See, it's not diversity as far as Rush Limbaugh is concerned, because that's too veiled. And it's not... It's not the left, because that's not direct enough. Rush Limbaugh, as we're going to hear a little bit later in the show, Rush Limbaugh blames Barack Obama. I know. We're going to hear about that later in the show. But first, let me bring on my guest, who I'm very pleased to have with us tonight. Norman Solomon is a regular guest of mine. He doesn't just write about what happens in the wars that America is waging and the reasons they're truly waging them and what happens to the soldiers in their wake. He goes over to Afghanistan to find out what's going on. Norman Solomon has an endless list of credentials, and we're going to be posting a lot of those up on our live blog right now. That's at lftlc.com/live, lftlc.com/live. You will find his column running around the country. You will find his work moving right along every day at the Public Accuracy Institute, and we're going to put that link up as well. Norman, welcome back to the air. Thank you for joining me tonight.
Oh, hi, Angie.
You had to have been hearing some of this same rhetoric coming out, this effort to say that what happened at Fort Hood, you know, can't be blamed on religious terrorism, which appears to me to be the actual cause, but it's because of decisions that have been made that demand tolerance and diversity on the military bases.
Well, one theory I would put out, and I think there's a lot to it, is that the likes of Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly are so upset with the fundamentalist killers because they are brothers under the skin, that the specific theology is different. They call themselves Christian Americans rather than Islamicists, but that essentially it's a deadly intolerance. And they just happen to be on different sides of the same battle, which is to exterminate the believers who believe the wrong way. And they are believers in killing those who believe the wrong way. When I watched last night and saw Bill O'Reilly with his guest, and I use that term in quotes, Bernard Goldberg, who shared the chores of blasting the so-called liberal media in the context of what happened at Fort Hood, I was reminded again of what Martin Luther King Jr. called the madness of militarism. Because really, this rabid attack from the right wing in the last few days, which is escalating, is really an expression of bloodthirst, I believe, and an eagerness to turn over and to overturn the vestiges of restraint in U.S. Military policy. They want to massively escalate war, and they want to stampede the president into doing that.
I want to point out that our live blog is tootling along as you and I talk to Norman Solomon. That's lftlc.com/live, lftlc.com/live, as I, Angie Cuero, sit in for Mike Malloy on his show. Norman Solomon, my guest, and I see on the live blog that Brad Friedman of Brad Blog has just joined us. I'll be interested in seeing his comments as well. Norman, we are just about up against a break at this point, but I'm wondering, you were mentioning some of the media coverage that you have seen. Are there any, just to leaven the loaf a little bit, are there any kudos we can give out as to people who have been handling this coverage pretty well?
Well, I've been seeing a lot of really good stuff on some of the progressive websites. And, of course, I haven't been able to, you know, listen to the various radio shows around the country simultaneously. But I know there are a lot of good voices out there. And it's quite a contrast to the corporate-driven stuff, particularly on Fox. But, frankly, I've been watching a lot of CNN, and it's pretty dreadful.
We were talking just at the very beginning of the show, or I was mentioning at the beginning of the show, that this attack on diversity has been foremost. But, you know, we're also hearing, Rush, not the only one, but that Barack Obama is at fault. Have you been hearing that as kind of a talking point, or is that more isolated around the edges? I'm trying to pin that down.
Well, I think that it's often a sort of a middle ground where his policies are being attacked, and then the next connected dot, which, of course, is an absurd connection, is what happened, this terrible mass killing at Fort Hood. And so I think it's sort of in the wind, and you have people like Hannity and Rush Limbaugh being very overt about it. But I think part of the tactic, and it's been from Fox and Washington Times and Weekly Standard for a decade and more now, is to put into the media mainstream in very concentrated form some of the most absurd right-wing craziness, with the assumption that even if it gets diluted, as it gets over to the mainstream, it will still be pernicious enough to damage the Democratic Party.
All right, Doran Solomon, we're going to come back with you in just a moment here on The Mike Malloy Show. I'm Angie Coiro, sitting in and watching the blog at lftlc.com/live. We'll be right back.
Individual results may vary. Program not available in all states. See contract for complete terms.
If your credit card debt is out of control, if you're in over your head dealing with monthly payments, there is powerful information you need to know about the government's bailout of credit card companies. If you have more than $10,000 in credit card debt, you have the right to settle that debt for a fraction of what you owe with monthly payments you can afford. Credit card companies have been given billions and need to clean their books once and for all. And that's great news for you. We're Credit Answers, and we'd like to offer you free information that will show you how to settle your credit card debt with payment plans customized for you. It's yours free by calling 1-800-600-9526. Don't declare bankruptcy. Give us 10 minutes and learn how we have saved our clients millions. Live better, debt-free. For free information on how to settle your credit card debt in a government bailout era, call 1-800-600-9526. That's 1-800-600-9526. 1-800-600-9526.
Warner Stallion customers know the difference between a low price and the best bottom line cost. That's what we've been delivering for over 50 years. Warner Stallion guarantees the lowest price on over 40 brands. And Warner Stallion customers enjoy free delivery, professional installation, and free recycling of replaced appliances. Our competitors try to match our pricing because they know they'll never match our service. Make Warner Stallion your appliance specialist. Go to WarnerStallion.com to find the location nearest you.
When you support the advertisers that support this station, you're doing a good thing. Not only are you supporting local small businesses, you're investing in your community and the future of this great state. And if for some reason you find a business that doesn't advertise on AM 950, tell them that they're missing out on the most influential and loyal listeners in the Twin Cities. For a complete list of businesses that support this station, or to find out how you can get an AM 950 bumper sticker, visit am950ktnf.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Kathy Fields, co-creator of Proactive Solution. What if I told you I could make your acne disappear and give you a healthy-looking complexion? With all the acne promises out there, you're skeptical. So I'm going to prove it to you by sending you a risk-free 60-day trial of Proactive Solution, the revolutionary acne-fighting system.
To get your risk-free 60-day trial of Proactive Solution, just call 1-800-428-4523 and you'll become a believer. 1-800-428-4523. Call now.
This is Ed Schultz, and when I'm in the Twin Cities, I expect two things, friendly people and great food. And you'll find them both at the Louisiana Cafe, the Uptown Diner, and the Woodbury Cafe. For a hearty breakfast and a great cup of fair trade coffee, I like to head over to the Louisiana Cafe, close to the Capitol, just south of 94, off Dale at Selby. the Uptown Diner, known for their great breakfasts and lunch, political hot talk, and plenty of parking. You know, they're open late Thursday through Saturday at Hennepin and 26th. And then there's the Woodbury Cafe. Love this place. Just off Tamarack, one block east of 494. You know, for many years, progressives in the Twin Cities have made the Louisiana Cafe, the Uptown Diner, and the Woodbury Cafe their local gathering places. And it's easy to see why. Stop by and find out for yourself. Tell them Big Eddie sent you.
Hi, this is Dr. David Stiercy from the Big Brain Radio Show. Hey, if you haven't listened to the Big Brain Radio Show, the Big Brain Radio Show is about the magic of our mind, the magical mystery of our big brain, the mind that creates our life for us. You're going to find out stuff that works every time. How would you like to have your employees align their values with your values to increase their productivity and their loyalty? If you want to know how to have it be natural for production and service to show up in your life, listen to the Big Brain Radio Show every Saturday at 11 o'clock.
Show. I'm Angie Coiro sitting in for Mike tonight. I figure they're going to get that storm damage fixed by tomorrow night. He's going to be back on the airwaves. But in the meantime, I'm grateful to him for tossing his audience over my way. It's nice to meet you all. You can join our gang from our usual show in San Francisco, which is called Live from the Left Coast. That's all going on at lftlc.com/live. LFTLC, as in Live from the Left Coast. .com/live. We're coming to you from Green 960 in San Francisco while they pick up the pieces of the ISDN system where Mike lives. Brad Friedman is there from BradBlog on the blog right now giving his comments, and he said we need to be able to ensure that the public airwaves, the publicly subsidized cable outlets, actually offer real news when they say they're offering news. And what provoked that? It's an interesting exchange that went on here at the live blog, because Jack Space was talking about this approach to the right as we discussed what happened at Fort Hood. And the way that the right has been portraying it, and the way that they are, as per usual, trying to put the fault on Barack Obama, trying to put the fault on diversity, trying to put the fault on socialism, anything other than the stresses of war and religious terrorism, which is too close to home for them. We have the conversation going on online where Phoenix says the right works on passion and emotional turmoil. The left applies patience and logic. These are naturally mutually exclusive, to which Jack responds, when you place people into a state of fear, you place them into a state of mind where they're vulnerable to suggestion. The right has mastered the art of neuro-linguistic programming. We have to learn not only to avoid falling prey to it, but to help others wake up from their essential hypnosis. And one more exchange I found interesting, where Phoenix came back with, I may be more cynical than you. There'll always be a blank staring person who just needs programming. Jack says yes, but during election years, we need that blank staring person's vote, sadly. To my guest on this, Norman Solomon, this is what frustrates me. If the people who engage in this level of rhetoric could just be dismissed out of hand, it would be one thing. But on the one hand, they're laying the groundwork for more violence later on. On the other hand, they get to vote as often as you or I do.
Well, certainly a lot of this, being in November 2009, is lead up to the races next year, particularly for Congress. And I think, frankly, even before the last few days, there's a lot of indication that the Democrats are in danger of losing the majority in the House. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I think it's a very real possibility. And so the propaganda barrage is already escalating here, and I think there's a policy motive as well. It's a classic that the right wing from the time of the 1960s and the Vietnam War has tried to portray a Democrat in the Oval Office as being insufficiently determined to use the might of the United States government. And that is certainly part of the right wing and Republican agenda. To create so much pressure that President Obama will even increase beyond his already planned escalation of the war in Afghanistan. I think it's a definite, a virtual definite, President Obama will be ordering the sending of tens of thousands of additional troops to Afghanistan. And we're going to be hearing that in the news in a matter of weeks, if not days. That was in train weeks ago. But this pressure will only stampede further the president's resolve to do that.
As you listen to Norman Solomon, as I talk to the folks on the blog as well, you are welcome to participate in our conversation via the phone lines. Here are the numbers, not the usual ones Mike would use because our show is based in San Francisco. You can dial 866-960-5753 if you're in the immediate area, 866-960-5753. The call-in number from anywhere else, and we would enjoy your using it, 415-882-9670. Area code 415-882-9670. What disturbs me, Norm, is that even as the Republicans fall further and further into disgrace and the poll numbers show nobody wants to be called a Republican right now, those who identify as conservative is actually, that number is accelerating. Why is that?
Well, I think it's kind of a plunge to the bottom. Part of the pattern is that while President Obama himself has fairly good popularity ratings overall. And even while, as you say, the brand name Republican has fallen on very, very hard times, still in all, there's a pushback against the status quo. And like it or not, the status quo now has a donkey on it. And it's hard to say which end of the donkey is more perceived. You know, when you have the stock market now above 10,000 on the Dow, and you have the unemployment rate officially above 10%, this is exactly the unacceptable situation that Barack Obama quite properly denounced a year ago. And so people are saying, well, this is not the status quo that we want, and I believe it makes more vulnerability for the incumbents, and that is seen as an both ends of Pennsylvania Avenue, the Democratic Party. So I would just sort of sum up that we have this paradoxical situation that Republicans are at low ebb, and yet conservatives are gaining strength.
And that's where we'll pick it up in a moment with Norman Solomon here on the Mike Malloy Show. Stick around. I'm Angie Claro. Sitting in for Mike tonight. He's got some tech problems due to Tropical Storm Ida. He'll be back with you tomorrow night. It's nice to share some space with you on our live blog and on the air. The blog is at the site of our San Francisco show. You can participate there, lftlc.com/live. Live from the Left Coast, lftlc.com/live. And let's get you in on this conversation, too, about what the right wing is doing with the Fort Hood shootings. Our call-in numbers, 866-960-5753 in the Bay Area, 866-960-5753. Outside the Bay Area, from anywhere else, you can dial area code 415-882-9670, 415-882-9670. In a little while, we're going to be hearing the divergent views about the speech Barack Obama gave today at the memorial service for those who were injured at Fort Hood and those who died, of course. Norman Solomon, a lot of your work has been devoted into how we got lied into the war in Iraq. And I'm wondering how effective the right wing's lies are at this juncture. You and I were just discussing that the Republicans have lost a lot of credibility, but conservatism as a reaction to unhappiness with the status quo is revving up. What does that say about the influence of the right to keep lying about things like what happened at Fort Hood, that it was all about diversity and all about left-wing socialism? Do they have the cred still to carry that off?
Well, I think that the right wing, including some of their major spokespeople and media outlets, are much better at tearing down than at governing. And so, in a way, this is their preferred position. They certainly did this well in a grotesque way during the 8 years of the Clinton administration. And while they could not prevent the re-election of Clinton, nor could they bring about the successful conviction of his impeachment in the Senate, they were, after all, able to gain control of the Congress after just 2 years of the Clinton administration. And I think that speaks to just the high capacity of the right wing in this country to engage in effective demagoguery. Once they gained control, I mean, of course, they used many of those techniques during the 8 years when they had both, or the 6 years, they had both the White House and the Congress, and then have continued to try to, you know, mobilize that capacity in the last 10 months or so. My fear would be that they are going to use these techniques and that Democrats will backpedal. And if Democrats simply backpedal or get into a defensive crouch, that will simply feed the right wing. And I think progressives, Democrats in general, need to push back very strongly.
And in fact, I'm happy to see on our live blog that, some people are at least, you know, aware of what's happening here. Tom says, for example, I can't believe how many people are tuning into Fox News, how many teabaggers are running around like idiots comparing health care to Hitler's genocide. These are obviously, you know, as I take off from Tom's point here, these are obviously the same kind of people who are going to believe what we're hearing from, for example, Bill O'Reilly. Here's Bill O'Reilly, Fox News. First, he plays a clip of General George Casey, Army Chief of Staff, saying, I believe it would be an even greater tragedy if our diversity becomes a casualty here. It's not just about Muslims. We must have a very diverse army. To which O'Reilly rejoinders, it is about Muslims. What General Casey is saying, we can't demonize on Muslims. That's what President Obama said last week. He plays the accompanying quote, and then he says, talking points does not disagree. Why does Bill O'Reilly talk about himself in the third person all the time? Talking points does not disagree with the president, but now aggressive action must be taken to find out what was known about Hassan. Who knew it? This guy just didn't snap. He was indoctrinated into Muslim fanaticism, and people knew it. Political correctness can get people killed. I believe that's part of the Fort Hood massacre story. Yet he continued to serve as a major in the Army because I believe he is a Muslim. So Norman, that's what we're up against. We're going to go to the phones together, and let's talk to Stephen, who's calling in from Burbank. Stephen, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show.
Hi, Angie. With these right-wingers, well, I think Joe Lieberman might be considered to be a Tory, but there was an attack, and Lieberman's trying to make it out like it's all Obama's fault because it happened on his watch. And my question is, did Obama get like 54 warnings, you know, that said Hassan determined to strike at Fort Hood, you know, and then Obama just completely ignored those warnings? I mean, if we want to go into talking points, I mean, I don't know if that's a talking point.
I think that is a beautiful puncture, Stephen. I thank you for that call. That's exactly, Norman, the kind of rejoinder we have to have. We have to hit back with the facts.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a camel or an elephant with a big, big tusk under the tent. And his name is Joe Lieberman. And this guy is just such a water carrier for the especially xenophobic and militaristic anti-diversity right wing. That I just think we need to know Lieberman is an out-out attack dog or attack elephant for the right at this point.
You're listening to Norman Solomon, and he is my guest as we discuss the right-wing attacks on the events on Fort Hood, their efforts to turn it into Obama's fault, the left's fault, diversity's fault. You know, the one we haven't hit on yet, Norman Solomon, is no one seems to hit on the gun issue fault either. And there are any number of attacks from the right wing on American soil where we find people who have, you know, stashes of gun that they fought so hard, you know, their Second Amendment, and you find them, you know, in their car. You find people from the right bearing their guns openly to Barack Obama's appearances. I mean, it's this bizarre double standard of what applies to them and what doesn't apply to us.
Yes, and I think this contradiction, it's a great point, Angie, has a lot to do with what Michael Moore explored in his film Bowling for Columbine. Really, when we talk about the need for gun control, And yet we see the Pentagon, where guns are not only everywhere, but seen as the finest instrument of expressing patriotism, then it gives a whole new meaning to the question of, do we want to control guns? You know, and there is a debate in this country about quote-unquote gun control, but very little discussion about how militarism in our society, what Martin Luther King called the madness of militarism, involves deifying guns, big ones, small ones, medium-sized ones, when it's under the heading of the Department of Defense. And, you know, there's a tremendous irony. What happened at Fort Hood, I mean, that is where guns are. That's where guns are designed to be. That's what the U.S. Treasury pays for. And, you know, frankly, if that guy who committed, apparently, allegedly, committed such mass murder at Fort Hood had been put out in Iraq or Afghanistan and pointed against insurgents, he would have been praised for doing the same thing, even if innocent people had been killed.
It's funny that you bring up that particular turning around, because Dar Jamal, speaking for the Asia Times and Alternet, or writing in it, he had the same idea, that when you turn this around, you'll find that the right won't be happy either way. President Obama this Tuesday attended a memorial service for the shootings at Fort Hood. He called the attack incomprehensible, when in fact it's easy to comprehend. Obama would do well to consider the war policies he's continuing, notably continuing, from the Bush administration. Extending the occupation of Iraq and Afghanistan are the underlying causes of acts of madness and desperation by soldiers. And it goes on to include the article of Dar Jamal, who is illuminating one case after another. So, again, in this case, with the right, it's damned if you do and damned if you don't. Right now, it's Barack Obama's fault because he's too far to the left. If you turn this around and say that the war is wrong, as started under George Bush and is being continued under George Bush's policies, then we'd be all wrong that way, too.
Well, that's a great point. And there's an assumption from the right wing and much of the rest of the media that soldiers are just like widgets, like robots. You can crank them up as much as you want, and they won't crack, or at least they should not crack. But the fact is that there is suicide. There's fragging. This is far from the only instance of enlisted people who have simply lost it and killed their own men and women that they are in uniform with. And that is one of the many consequences when you simply send people to 5 and 6 tours of duty as though they were simply machines.
Norman Solomon, I really thank you for spending time with us tonight. We hadn't expected to do this hour of the Mike Malloy Show. It's wonderful you made yourself available. And while I have you, I want to congratulate you on... I looked up the Rotten Tomatoes tomato meter on your documentary, War Made Easy, How Presidents and Pundits Keep Spinning Us to Death. And you rated an 88 on the tomato meter.
We did okay there. And by the way, people, if they're members of Netflix or whatever, they can get the War Made Easy documentary. Angie, I just really want to compliment you for your day in, day out great work here at Green 960 in the Bay Area, and keep up the great work.
Much obliged, sir. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Norman Solomon is the founder of the Institute for Public Accuracy, and you can find his column Media Beat at his website, normansolomon.com. When we come back, I am going to play for you that tape, as promised, of Rush Limbaugh, who's decided that this is Obama's fault. It's Obama's fault that this happened at Fort Hood. And we're going to talk to a regular guest of mine here on Green 960. I spent a lot of time on the line with Gotta Laugh. She polls at the political carnival, finds some great stuff that she shares over there, and she has been collating the response to Barack Obama's speech. And, gosh, the more you check this out, the more it seems like not one, not two, but gosh, how many speeches were given out there, depending on how you look at the reaction, because surely they can't all be reacting to the same speech. But it's more under the same banner of Barack Obama, he just can't win. Oh, except for presidential elections. In from Mike Malloy, I'm Angie Coiro. he's going to be back with you tomorrow night once they get the damage from Storm Ida cleaned up over there that knocked him out of commission for tonight. I'm Angie Coiro sitting in for him, and our live blog has stayed active here in San Francisco. Some of our guests are cracking me up there. If you want to join online, where we're seeing some Mike Malloy fans check in, it's nice to see you. New faces there. LFTLC.com/live is the website, and it's a parallel digital conversation to our online show, LFTLC.com/live. The reason I'm cracking up here is it's parallel to our talking about with Norman Solomon about the right-wing media and the way that they've been trying to spin these events at Fort Hood and the subsequent memorial, Obama's actions before and after. Jack Space in Berkeley notes on the blog that, it's funny how many times when I'm at bookstores, books by Coulter, Hannity, and O'Reilly wind up in the comic book section. Doing one for the team, Jack Space. Thank you so very much for that. We got somebody else lined up on our team, too. Gotta laugh. He is a regular blogger at Political Carnival. We're putting that link up at our blog right now, lftlc.com, because it's one of those blogspot things, and it goes on for about 10 miles, and we're actually linking to a particular post. And I think it's illustrative of what we've been talking about, which is the media portrayals of Barack Obama, no matter what he does. Let's just say trusting the media is kind of a silly thing to do, and I include myself in that. Go find backup for everything I'm trying to tell you, too. Although you can trust me. Gotta Laugh is a regular guest, and I'm happy to have her here. Yo, Laffy.
Hey, I don't trust you at all. What kind of intro was that?
Sorry.
Oh, I know. You're just media.
I'm the left-wing media you have heard so much about. The odd part of that is, of course, I'm truly in the minority being the left-wing media. That's the part nobody tells you.
Oh, come on. It's a liberal media. There is no Fox Network. That is absolutely a lie.
Wow, who just underwrote your blog? I'm terrified now what's coming out of your mouth.
So, hey, listen, so you want to know what's going on with this speech, huh?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I went to a site, and I saw that there were all kinds of things going on with this speech. It was, to me, honestly, the first thing that came to mind, and that's what I put up on the blog, was that it was like a Siskel and Ebert, or a Siskel was at the movies. There's no more, sadly, Ebert or Siskel, but it was like thumbs up, thumbs down. And they were at the opposite ends of the spectrum. It was like two critics, or more than two critics, arguing about a speech that was a very sad and very emotional and very, you know, important speech to a lot of very unhappy and sad people that needed the president. And instead we got, hey, he was great. No, he was unemotional. So I have one from the Wall Street Journal that says, this was not like George W. Bush's megaphone-amplified rallying cry on the ruins of the World Trade Center. It wasn't like Bill Clinton's shared grief and call for restraint and biting his lip at the Oklahoma City bombing. And it wasn't like Ronald Reagan. This was just a largely unemotional speech.
And this from the Wall Street Journal, which I'm sure is utterly irrelevant to the topic at hand.
Liberal media.
Indeed.
Okay. Then we skip down to that it was the best speech ever. Tegan Goddard over at his own site said it was the best speech, and he was terrific at consoling the nation, which I thought he was. I thought he was. When I watched the speech, I was blown away. I literally wrote, the first words I wrote down before anything was, oh, wow. And then I added a lot of other words. I could have left it at, oh, wow, it would have been silly. But then Mark Ambender says, I guarantee they'll be teaching this one in rhetoric classes. It was that good. My gloss won't do it justice. And here's my favorite line. Yes, I'm having a Chris Matthews chill running up my leg moment.
Yow.
Yeah. So we've gone from unemotional to chill up the leg. And then Chuck Todd of MSNBC and NBC said, that's going to be a speech that's remembered and quoted for quite some time, struck a balance of commander and consoler, not easy. And that's very true. He had to have some dignity. He was talking to a group of people who were, they were crying. You know, their loved ones had been taken from them in a horrible, horrible tragedy. He's not going to be talking through a megaphone and using a fireman as a prop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's not going to be biting his lip and feigning sorrow. He's going to be talking straight. You know, he actually spoke quite a straight talk express right there, you know, to borrow a terrible phrase. But he was heartfelt, but he also had, he was very, I thought, very dignified.
You know, I'm really glad that this post came up at the time that it did, Laffy, because it was brought to our attention while we were doing this hour about how the right-wing media will do anything they can to detract from the effectiveness of Barack Obama and to spin the events at Fort Hood and the aftermath. Your timing was exquisite, and thanks a lot for coming on the air tonight.
Oh, you're absolutely welcome. I'm glad to be here.
That is Gotta Laugh, a.k.a. Laffy. On our show, we call her the Demented Sidekick Buttercup. You can find her work linked at our website. She's at the Political Carnival. And that is linked at lftlc.com/live. I have truly enjoyed talking to Mike Malloy's audience tonight across the country on Sirius and on XM Satellite. I hope you have a chance to tune into our show again sometime, and I hope that I have time to talk to you again sometime across Mike's airwaves. I'm glad that he had me to call on tonight because this was really fun. Our show got a lot of help going on the air tonight. Our executive producer is Gordon Whiting. Susan O'Leary produced the hours, including the additional hours, with help from our interns Landra Shearer and Jenny Chesley. Randy Brown is the guy behind the music, and he really jumped through a lot of hoops tonight. Thanks, Randy Brown. Special thanks to the folks at Green 960 in San Francisco who helped us to put this together as well. John Scott, general manager, with a lot of help from the engineering crew. Corey, thanks to you as well. David Gans provides our normal closing music, and we are going to be once again grateful to our volunteer listeners who check in on the blog every night, bring in their links, etc. Special thanks to Palo Alto Jeff. You guys take care. Thanks for fighting the good fight along with Mike Malloy, because we know he does it right. And I hope to talk to you sometime soon. Have yourselves a great night. I'm Angie Curro, coming to you live from Green 960 in San Francisco with the Mike Malloy Show, live from the Left Coast. Good night.